Hey, hey, and welcome to Stopping By. I'm Doug Pierce, Senior Vice President and Financial Advisor with Pinnacle Wealth Partners at UBS Financial.
And I'm Jess DeBair, Associate Director and Senior Wealth Strategy Associate, also with Pinnacle Wealth Partners. We are located in Mount Laurel, New Jersey, and can be reached at pwp@ubs.com.
Our team's mission, our just cause, is to bring financial literacy and competency to the masses. We've been fortunate to meet interesting people along the way. They have compelling life stories about overcoming adversity and seeking their passions. Hopefully, you'll see that our guests are just like you. So Jess, who's stopping by today?
Doug, we have a first today because joining us are two fabulous guests who are quite the dynamic duo. Okay. Today, we have the distinct pleasure of chatting with Vic and Cassie Fangio. Vic is the current defensive coordinator for the Philadelphia Eagles, and Cassie works at Inova Alexandria Hospital as a NICU nurse. Neither of our guests are affiliated with UBS Financial Services Incorporated, and their views are their own.
All right. Let's see who's stopping by. I'm excited. It's just funny how this all works out. Like, we are not necessarily catering to sports and athletics. And we are certainly, the two of us are not the people you go to for sports and athletic impact.
I mean, you might not be. I know, but that's kind of how things are fleshing out here, right? Because we've had the Henry Burris, Hall of Famer, CFL. We've had the Damon Allen do a little cameo, another Hall of Famer. We're going to have Randy Foy.
We're surrounded by greatness.
Is it that we're surrounded by greatness, or greatness is drawn to us?
There you go. That's a better way to say it. We are going to be the place to be for a tangentially related financial podcast.
Correct. I want to talk about the Eagles. I would like to share my earliest Eagles memory with you. I think they were in the 1980 Super Bowl. And we had a party, a neighborhood party, and my mom made dip, and she felt it needed to be green, and she added green food coloring to the dip, and I was grossed out that the dip went from great to green, but she wanted it to be Eagles green, and we lost, and I cried. Was it at the Raiders? Was it the Raiders?
In 1981, it was the Super Bowl. So it's 80 season, 81.
Into 81. Then. Okay.
I think so.
All right.
All right, Jess. Jessica, I'm very excited for our podcast today. This is a first for us. This is the first time we'll be interviewing two guests at once.
Yes.
You know, we've had a wait list, so we had to start inviting people two at a time just to get through the waiting list for all the guests.
We got a double book. Got a double book.
Today, we are joined by Vic Fangio and his daughter, Cassie Fangio. One of the most exciting parts of our job is working with multiple generations within a family. And so families always have a special dynamic, and particularly the father-daughter relationship is a multi-layered one. So frankly, I really just want to interview Cassie Fangio, but Vic kept begging and calling, and I said, fine, Vic, we'll have you on, and we'll let the listeners hear you guys interact together. Cassie Fangio is a graduate of Towson University. She was commissioned from Loyola University's Maryland's ROTC program as a second lieutenant in the U.S. Army. After her military commitments ended, she brought her skills to the civilian side of things. Today, she works as a NICU nurse with Inova Alexandria Hospital in Virginia. Between her Army experience and her upbringing as a kid of a professional football coach, she has endured a very challenging environment and yet still maintains a sunny disposition. And of course, her father, Vic Fangio, was named defensive coordinator of my beloved Philadelphia Eagles earlier this year and brings over 38 years of experience to the team. He is considered the godfather of modern day defensive schemes. He has spent 25 years as a coordinator and mentored five Pro Football Hall of Famers. Last year, while with the Miami Dolphins, he helped get the team to the AFC playoffs. Prior to his time with the Dolphins, he spent the 22 season as a consultant for the Eagles, helping them on their Super Bowl 57 run. Vic has served as head coach of the Denver Broncos and as defensive coordinator for multiple top 10 defenses throughout his storied career, including franchises at the Chicago Bears and the San Francisco 49ers. Cassie and Vic, thank you very much for stopping by.
Thanks for stopping by. Snap.
I see where the name came from, the name of the podcast.
For many of our listeners, one of the things we love is a good origin story. So I'm going to start with the elder, age before beauty, right? tell us about how you got into the NFL or kind of where it all began for you.
Well, I started coaching in high school football. Then I went to prep school in Connecticut for a year. At that time, the East Coast equivalent of a junior college. University of North Carolina as a graduate assistant for a season. Then I came to the Philadelphia Stars in the USFL. Worked with Jim Mora. We won the championship both years. He got hired as the head coach of the New Orleans Saints. Took me with him. And I've been in the NFL ever since, minus 1 year at Stanford.
Oh my God. Why did you go into coach?
Quickly figured out I wasn't good enough to play at the higher level. So I always wanted to be part of professional sports. So I turned my focus to coaching. And I had a good high school coach who was legendary in the state of Pennsylvania, Jack Henson. Mm-hmm. So that was a benefit for me. I coached under him for a few years before I went on my track.
When you entered coaching, there wasn't the kind of money we see today, right? Coaching at that time was sort of just a passion sport.
Yeah, when I got into coaching, all I wanted to do was become a head high school coach at some point. But then I was told I was pretty good at it, so I said I should pursue the higher levels. I did, but anybody my age or 10 years younger than me didn't get into coaching for the money. Because at that time, not that the money was bad, but you weren't going to get it. It wasn't great. Mm-hmm. And now it is. So a lot of people are in coaching because the money is better. So there are some people that are in it now, not just for the love of the game like it was when I started.
Cassie, in your situation, you went to an ROTC program. I know that a lot of people go to the ROTC program to help them pay for school and things like that. And that seems like a really hard path to set out on. Why in the heck would you do such a thing?
If I had a penny or maybe a nickel for any time, every time I got asked that question since I joined ROTC, I wouldn't need your help. Anytime I tell somebody or they know I'm in the Army and then they find out about my dad, they're like, what the heck are you doing here? I just kind of always wanted to join, but you know, I was like a very petite girl growing up, so I never thought I could do anything like physical, like join the Army like that. And at one of my like involvement fairs that Towson had, ROTC had a table, and it was like the light was shining on this like Army nurse pamphlet, and it just kind of like all kind of clicked. Yep. So I commissioned in May of 2019. I was only in for 4 years, but it was still a great experience. Wouldn't change it for the world.
And Vic, when Cassie was like, Dad, I'm going ROTC, what was your response?
Same thing. Asked her why. Told her she didn't have to do it, but she wanted to do it for all the right reasons. You know, going back to the same question I just had, I was coaching for the love of the game, not money. Mm-hmm. And
yeah,
she joined the ROTC for all the benefits that it could be that weren't financial. Mm-hmm. So kind of understood after that.
Yeah. So Cassie, I have a question for you, because when I'm thinking about this question, it makes me think of my own kids. I have an extraordinarily tall husband. He's 6'9". And so I have asked my kids this question. They're teenagers. When did you realize that dad was a ginormous, gigantic person? Like, when did you realize, or did you always think that everyone else's dad was just little? Like, what was that like? And so for you, when was the first time you realized that your dad was like a known person in the world?
He's been in the NFL longer than I've been alive. So to me, it's just the normal. I think in Stanford, we won the Orange Bowl in Stanford, and that was a really cool experience. And that was just a lot of fun. And we beat Virginia Tech and we partied all night. That was a great time. And I think that kind of started to, this is kind of cool. And then he went to the 49ers and was really successful there. And then we went to the Super Bowl. And that's kind of where things kind of started clicking in my head that this is pretty unique. Yeah. So I lived in Baltimore, and I did a little like news clip about what it was like being a high schooler amongst Baltimore Ravens fans as a 49ers fan.
Yeah.
Wow.
Were they nice to you? Did you have to have like armed security taken into
mixture.
The game?
Yeah. You know, you get a mix. Some people are really nice, and then some people just don't recognize. Some people, to them, it's just a game. which is fine. Mm-hmm. But to us, it's not just a game. So, you know, what people say and how things work out, it affects you deeper than everybody else.
And that brings up an interesting point. Like, we've had guests on that talk about working with families and wealthy families, and sometimes wealthy family, you know, the brand of the company is your last name, and it's hard to get out and acknowledge it. Was there ever a time when you were sort of hesitant to share who you are or your last name or something like that?
So it wasn't always like I could say my name without people like piquing their interest. But lately, I would say in the last like 10 years, they have to be a pretty big football person. But if I say my last name, the frequency of people recognizing the name and saying any relation to Vic, you know, that has increased over the last 10 years. So luckily, like I was out of most school by that time. I've had the same philosophy all my life is I never tell anybody and I just let people find out on their own because people do find out and then the words like wildfire. So I've never come into a situation where, you know, I just volunteer the information. I'm 8 months, almost 9 months into a new job and nobody knows at my new job yet.
Not
the that's a win.
Podcast. Yeah. So sharing the podcast probably we'll ruin it.
So, but was there ever a challenge in that? Has there ever been a challenge been connected to being Vic's daughter? Like socially or just like feeling like you had to achieve certain greatness because he is this fantastic coach?
The only thing I ever was like worried about was like people, you know, like things you see in the movies, people only being friends with me because they want to take it. I never really felt like that ever actually happened. I never had any bad experiences with friends or anything like that. I mean, I've had like some idiots like ask me for tickets and stuff where like, it's just, you know, the answer is an obvious no. The expectations of him being so successful. I mean, I think it's more just motivational. And I was talking to my boyfriend the other day. I was like, I think I just need to accept that like, I'm just going to be a nurse forever. And I'm not really going to have like some cool job like my dad does, which is totally normal and fine.
But nursing is such a cool job. You're like saving lives and stuff. You're like,
yeah, but there's only
baby lives.
There's only 32 of what he does. There's many of what I do.
Yes, but are they all fabulous and fantastic? Are they all good at what they do, right?
I don't know. I'll let the score show that, but.
So Vic, so we have a colleague that spent time in professional football coaching. And, you know, one of the things he always talks about is how unsteady of a career it can be in that, you know, you don't win games or sending them a moving truck to their house. And so early on, was that a challenge in your career about picking up and moving and going places? And then as you matured, did it become easier to sort of figure that part out?
Well, it's always a challenge, but most of the moves my kids had to make were they were 12 years old or younger. They never had to make a hard high school move. So
that's good.
But a lot of the guys in the profession, it is a problem when you, sometimes a problem when you change in high schools. But I've also had a friend of mine in coaching, he had to move his daughter during high school and during his freshman year. And he apologized to her for moving her. And he said, don't apologize to her. I see all these other freshmen here that are frantic about their starting their college career and moving, and she was more ready for it and adjusted to it, and it was nothing for her. So, yeah, there is some negative to it, but there is some positive to it also.
I think there is merit to that too, Vic, in terms of like, you're going to have to do that in life anyway. And like, Cassie, I've talked to you when you're in different states and like, you just made a move and you're like, I just moved like 5 different states. And I'm just like, most people, they'd be rocked by that. Like, I can't do anything else. And you just kind of did it. Like, I need to update my address with you. I'm like, again? Are you sure?
Yeah.
I thought we just got it right here. So I think it's definitely makes you stronger and a better person having gone through it.
For sure. And were you always, like, did you become fans of whatever team you moved to?
It's immediate. Like, my brother is the best example of it. So the second my dad knows, like, for sure, I'm done with this team and I'm on to the next, my brother gets rid of all of his clothes.
Oh.
Yeah,
he's hardcore.
He donates them.
Oh, okay.
But,
all right.
I mean, it's like clear cut and dry, like no bad feelings, but on to the next and, you know, immediate support for the next one.
So Vic, one of the biggest challenges, I want some coaching advice because the biggest challenge in our world a lot of times is we're meeting with very successful people, right? That have done really impressive things and they've made a lot of money And hardest thing in the world is tell somebody that's had a lot of success that, hey, you know, you could be doing this a little bit better. You could be doing things financially better. I think it's the job. I think it's, you know, how we go about it. Some people shy away from it, but I think it's important. And so you as a coach are dealing with professional athletes who've been the greatest at their every level that they've been at. So can you talk about sort of how you go about telling great athletes what they could do to be better? And did you ever face any challenges at that, especially earlier on your career before you had such, you know, gravitas?
The players just want to be the best they can be. And if they realize early on that you're helping them be the best they can be, then they're great. If they early on think you're not helping them be the best they can be, that you're not really good at what you do, they're the first to figure that out. And then you do have a problem. But I've never had that happen. You have to earn their trust. I think you get their trust right off the bat. It's given to you, but you have to keep it, earn to keep it. And once they realize you know what you're doing and you can help them become the best version of themselves that they can be, then they're all in.
Yeah. How do you figure out what it is per player, or do you, that's going to motivate them, that's going to make them the best versions of themselves? Because everybody's different. Everybody has different ways of taking feedback or taking criticism. How do you figure that out?
You just quickly figure out the best way they can learn. It's one-on-one and in a group setting, but it's very interpersonal. And so it's like being in a college class where the coach personal relationship with, and you're talking to them and conversing with each other and quizzing them. And it all goes back to, if they believe that you know what you're doing, everything's good.
Our business works that way too. Yeah. If the market goes up, that really helps.
Exactly.
If you've had like a big, huge, important game, let's say, and you have lost, in my mind, when everybody goes back to the locker room, there's this sesh afterward. Are you like, get them next time, guys? Or does it depend on the game? Like, I'm just really curious about what does that locker room look like, sound like?
It all depends on the magnitude of the game. Not so much the magnitude or what was expected in the game. Were you clearly the underdog? Were you clearly the prohibitive favorite? You know, a lot of guys failing in coaching in the NFL because they don't know how to deal with losses. It's very important what you do say after a game and the next day after a game to make your correction, be critical of mistakes and teach them the right from wrong and move on. You can't let a loss have a hangover that lasts 2-3 days or a week, you know, because you got another game. It's like in your business or the businesses you follow, quarterly reports. That's what, 4 times a year, we play 17 games in a row. So it's, you got to move on, pick yourself up and get rolling. And that's the one about sports that's different than most professions. We're all going to get knocked down figuratively and literally, and you got to be able to come back.
Cassie, I'm sure some players are intimidated by your dad. What was it like being his kid? Have you seen any similarities in his coaching to how you were raised? And also, have you ever had a crush on a player and you told dad? And then what was that like? What happened? What was that like?
That wasn't on the script that you sent
me. I know. Oh, sometimes I go off script.
I guess I'll answer the first question. Well, I don't know how he is behind closed doors with his players. When he was a head coach in Denver, I got to see more video interaction with the players. I think he was kind of like similar, a guy that you don't want to disappoint, but he's kind of quiet about it. Like, he's not going to yell in your face. I think it's just high expectations of how he thinks that you should behave. You know, all the articles I read about him, it's kind of like he's really good at picking the best parts of the player and then like exemplifying those best parts each player. And that's why he can make players do better even in like their 10th year. He just wants you to be the best version of yourself.
So, Vic.
Excuse me.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
How dare you.
That's what happens when you go off script.
I can't think of a single player I've ever been like very giddy. I was always very like young, way too young for any of those men to be like talking to me. But I definitely thought it was like very cool to be amongst them. And then I remember the game that we won to go to the Super Bowl when we beat the Falcons in Atlanta. I went in the locker room after, and Deshaun Goldston, I think was his last name. He picked me up in the locker room, like by my under my arms, and swung me around and was like, "Yeah, let's go, little Fangio." Aww. And that was like the coolest thing ever. So I think I had a crush on him.
Yeah. Was Dad like, "Put her down"?
I don't know if he noticed that. And there's been other players like where I've been more like starstruck, like, you know, Ray Lewis, Patrick Willis. Patrick Willis is probably my favorite player. Peyton Manning I've met. And so just players where they have more fame to their name. Yeah. And you're a little starstruck. Yeah. But never a crush.
Sure. All right, let's go back a little here. Leadership. We're hyper-focused on building a good team. What do you think are the elements that make a great team?
First and foremost, you have to have most of your guys, if not all of them, that are willing to put the team first. Because anything you do, especially in football, you may have to do something that's hard for your position. That's because it's for the betterment of the team. A team first mentality, you got to always be aware of that. When you're having guys do hard jobs that they're not good at per se, but for the good of the team, it has to happen. You explain it to them in a one-on-one, and many times I'll do it in front of everybody to say, hey, this is going to be tough on so-and-so, but this is the best way we got. So, you know, recognize the guys that are sacrificing a little bit or being asked to do something that is going to be hard.
And deciding whether it's one-on-one or in front of a bunch of people, that depends on the kind of the scenario that you have to get across, right? Even professional athletes need an attaboy. That's what I'm hearing. All right, let's get to your investment prowess. Because I've told you this, Vic, you are more clued into the investment world than many people in the football world. How did you get interested in the investment world? And tell me about your money principles when you were growing up.
Well, if I wasn't in coaching, I'd be a financial guy. I don't know if I would be a financial guy, but I'd be doing something in the business world. And then in 1986, actually, 87, when I was with the Saints, our general manager had a friend who was really big in the financial world. This guy was tying it into Wayne Huizenga and some of those people. And so he had the idea to start an investment club at the Saints. And anybody that wanted to get in could invest the money in this guy that would manage it for us. And we called it the Fleur de Lis Investment Club, Fleur de Lis meaning the Saints. So that was my real start. And so once we started doing that, I really followed it. And I'm just always, any way to make money, I'm into.
We like it.
And where do you think your money principles came from?
Probably growing up. Of course, my parents lived through the Depression. They valued money. So we learned to be frugal, and I'm still accused of that to this day.
Would you agree, Cassie?
I just would. This is an audio podcast.
This you is not even
for our listeners. We got it there.
We got agreeable a nod.
Cassie, same question. Tell me about your money principles growing up. Was your dad to sit me down and me explain how this is all going to work, or you just kind of learned through observing?
My mom was a teacher, and then my dad's obviously good at teaching. And so they both, you know, wanted to teach me and my brother about the importance of money and the importance of saving. I think from a really young age, we were taught, you know, you have to work for what you have. And then when we would get our $2.50, $3, $4.50, we had piggy banks and we could see the money accruing and be like, wow, you work hard and then you get more money. And then, you know, we would get to go, you know, buy things that we wanted. I just got accustomed to making money, saving money, and then being really happy with looking at my money.
Principles that still hold true today.
Yeah.
And what does money mean to you, Cassie?
I don't know. Money helps with a lot of stuff. So being smart with your money, you need money. If you don't have money, you're not happy. So I don't know. The saying money is happiness kind of has some truth to it. It more so means independence, I think. Having a good sense of money and saving money and being very frugal, probably overly frugal with the way I spend. You know, I've been lucky enough to be able to be independent from my parents since, you know, graduating college.
It's a good feeling, right? Feels good. And how about you, Vic? What is your earliest memory surrounding money, and what does money mean to you?
I don't remember the earliest, but I would always count my money.
So it's hereditary.
It's a family trend.
Yeah, money gives you peace of mind. I'm still not one to waste it. You know, if I don't need something, I don't get it. The only reason I'm still like people benefiting from me worse now is my kids.
Well, I mean, you're also keeping some financial advisors employed. I mean, that's good too. The world needs financial advisors.
All right, Vic, I have a bonus question for you because I know that you grew up rooting for the Phillies. So is this the year? Are they going to win the World Series this year?
I seem to bring luck to the baseball teams of the cities I coach in.
Oh.
You heard it here first.
When we were in San Francisco, they won their first 3 World Series while I was there. They had never done it before. And then I go to Chicago. They won their first in over 100 years while I was there. In 22, when I was with the Eagles in a background role, they went to the World Series. So now that I'm here, lead role, they should go to the World Series and win.
It's going to happen. Who is the greatest Philly of all time?
Mike Schmidt, Steve Carlton, and Richie Allen.
You know, Mike Schmidt and I share a birthday. Just saying, he's my favorite. Is that right? Not the same year, but yes.
How about a football question? Vic, if you had a position or a player to build a defense around?
I make no bones about it. I've had a long career in the NFL because I've been around a lot of good players. It's just like if you don't pick good vehicles to make money, you're not going to have a long career in your business either. I've had a lot of them. I don't want to start naming them, but there's 5 guys in the Hall of Fame that I've had extensive coaching with. Now, Patrick Willis is being inducted this August. So a lot of good ones, and a lot of good ones that aren't household names. So, because you need those guys. That's like, you know, you need the stocks that aren't glamorous, that pay good dividends, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
You need those types of players on your team, too.
I just found our promo clip.
Any other questions, Jessica?
I think I'm all out of questions, Douglas. This has been delightful.
Vic's got to, you know, he's got to get to the ball game. He's got to beat traffic.
I got a question. When are we going to start picking some new winners?
Hey, you got to pull the trigger, man. For a defensive guy, you pass a lot.
Yeah.
Scared money don't make money.
But it doesn't lose it.
Well, then, okay. All right. The yin and the yang. All right. Well, listen, we're going to let you guys get back to your life. Vic and Cassie Fangio, thank you for being so gracious with your time. Thank you for inviting us into your father-daughter family dynamic. And thank you for stopping by.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Right.
Thank you.
Thanks hey, for
thank
stopping
you guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye, guys.
This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.